ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Have you ever walked into a building and just immediately felt at ease? Or maybe you've entered a public space and suddenly felt the tension rise and your shoulders tighten? It turns out that it might have something to do with colour. Our primitive emotional response to the urban environment is as much a function of its colour as its design. Of course, colours always played a really important role in our everyday lives. We have this almost reptilian response to seeing red signs and traffic lights that literally stop us in our tracks. Similarly, green sort of signals action, go ahead, positivity, momentum. What about the role that colour plays in our relationship to urban design? What forces are at play when it comes to colour in the built environment? And how can we use those colours while also being aware of how they're using us? Now, if you've got some questions or comments on how colour's used in your part of the world, maybe there's a place where the colour scheme makes you feel relaxed and comfortable, on one that you think needs a repaint. Zena O'Connor is a research associate with the University of Sydney's Faculty of Architecture, Design and Planning. She has a PhD in evidence-based colour research. She's going to help us take a closer look at colour tonight and have a look at the role that it plays in, well, both built design and our everyday lives. Hi, Zena. Welcome to Nightlife.
Hi, Suzanne. Thank you so much. Lovely to be here.
So what got you into this field of study? Where does your fascination with colour stem from?
So I actually trained as a designer way back, and I became interested in all of the elements of design, colour being one of those. And along the way, I did become interested in exploring claims like blue is calming, red is arousing. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to figure if these could possibly apply to everyone all of the time, irrespective of the context. And my gut feeling was that probably wasn't the case, but I was keen to sort of delve deeper into the sort of evidence-based information about colour.
So what did you find then about those ideas that everybody talks about?
So what I found was that the interface between colour and human response is actually very complex. We're not hardwired to always respond to certain colours in a certain way. That there are other factors that impose on that interface, if you like. I know that from my point of view, no amount of blue will calm me down if I've had an argument with my partner. A lot of those claims aren't necessarily all that evidence-based. So
okay, is there something in some of them, though?
There is, yes, there is. There is. Red is a colour that attracts our attention, and that is a primal sort of hardwired response. We do tend to notice red. We do tend to not necessarily be attracted to the colour red, because a lot of people have negative connotations for that colour, but it certainly is a colour that attracts our attention. Yep. Mm.
So if we look at colour as a common design element in the built environment, how do you use it strategically?
So there are a lot of ways to use colour beyond just simply aesthetics. Designers and architects tend to use colour in certain ways to attract attention. Red obviously is one that will attract attention. Bright colours relative to the background colours will attract attention. And they're often used to sort of guide us through a space, if you like, or draw us further into a space. Colour is also used, and especially strong colour contrast is also used to attract our attention to key design details like product controls and doorknobs and handrails. And this is particularly important in design for the built environment for older people, people with declining visual capacity, people with declining cognitive capacity, to help them find handrails, doorknobs, basically.
Right. So you want those to stand out?
Absolutely, yeah. Yep.
Oh, fascinating stuff. Now, Hannah, who I know is a huge fan of Lego, but says the Lego shop is a place where she loves going with the bright colours. But I'm just thinking that I'm pretty sure the Lego shop, when I go into it, there's actually a lot of white, which makes the yellow and then all the bright colours really pop when you go in there.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely, yeah, definitely.
So red is used a lot in retail, particularly fast food chains. Why does it get used in fast food? Why does it make me want to have a burger?
Well, it really is just about bright, saturated colours attracting our attention. There was some dated research from last century that suggested that orange increased our appetite. But, of course, that's not evidence-based. Mm. You know, if I've already had 15 hamburgers, again, no amount of orange will make me have a 16th hamburger. But bright colours, saturated colours, colour contrast definitely attracts our attention. And it also obviously appeals to children who tend to drag us to fast food chains.
Now, apparently red helps us be drawn to the change rooms when we're looking for clothes in some cases.
Well, yes. Research has indicated that red and warm colours will draw us further into a space. So there's a restaurant at Randwick, for example, which has a red-coloured back wall, and it helps to draw people further into what is a very long, deep restaurant. Red will or warm colours will be used near the checkout or near the change rooms to sort of draw us towards those, and also act as a signal to send us down to the change rooms or the checkout. Yeah.
So why do I want to follow the colour red though?
It just simply is a signalling device.
Right, because everybody uses it. We know somewhere in our subconscious.
It's a familiar kind of trick, if you like,
yeah. Now, what about when you've got big murals in public places? Is there some clever use of colour going on there?
Yeah, there is, absolutely. Colour murals, all sorts of sort of visual devices are used to encourage engagement. You know, there might be an area or a tunnel perhaps that is a little dangerous late at night or whatever. So colour lighting murals will be used to enliven that space and encourage a greater engagement in that space.
It's funny, I reckon I would automatically feel safer in a tunnel with a bright mural than in another tunnel, even though there might not be any rationale for that.
Exactly, even though technically they'll be the same tunnel, but one with a mural and bright coloured lighting will appear safer. Yeah.
Now, what about when we use multicolours in a design? What's that trying to tell us?
So multicolours are often used together to convey a sense of inclusivity and diversity. So there are quite a few logos that feature multicolours in them. Google is one, Opal cards, the travel cards, the little logo is multicoloured. Quite a few large global organisations, Olympics, use multicolours in the logos, and it's to convey automatically this sense of inclusivity and diversity.
I'm just thinking of Benetton, whose actual logo is United Colours of Benetton.
Yes, yes, exactly. That was from way back in the 80s, I think.
I think it might be.
There's a fabulous charitable society just close to here called the Benevolent Society, and its logo is multicoloured, and in their office space, workspace, the interior is fitted out in the same multicoloured palette. And it's absolutely fabulous because it's obviously been done to appeal to adults, children, different generations, different cultures, people of different backgrounds. So very, very effective.
My guest is Zena O'Connor, a research associate with the University of Sydney's Faculty of Architecture, Design and... No, you need to correct me.
I need to, yes. I'm sorry, that is dated information. Yeah, I'm with Design Research Associates and Colour Design Resources. So, yeah, my apologies.
No, our apologies. Dated. Clearly we have dated information there. So Zena... You're saying, you know, you'd use bright colours in a children's hospital, a children's ward. Why don't they do the same for adults, though? I mean, why is this idea that kids like bright colours and adults don't?
Well, good question. But don't forget, out in the streets of Sydney at the moment, we have Vivid Sydney. So, you know, we have a city full of bright colours at the moment. ever since Vivid started, it's occurred to me that it is an installation that could in fact be spread across all of Sydney, every side street, every back lane.
We are national, so across the whole country.
Across the whole country, absolutely, absolutely. It shouldn't just be certain parts of Sydney. Yep, definitely.
So I'm fascinated in talking about the colour red, because red is not only associated with danger, caution and fast food, but there is a well-documented, I'm guessing scientifically, heterosexual male response to seeing red.
Yes, there is. There is a colleague of mine, Andrew Elliott. He's from the Department of Clinical and Social Sciences in Psychology at the University of Rochester. He and some colleagues did a study, and they looked at red, and they found that heterosexual Western men are attracted to women who wear red. And they found that it's a quite a deep conditioned response that is as strong as the waist to hips ratio and facial symmetry. So all the single ladies out there, next time you go out on a night out, wear red.
And so how does the red relate to the symmetry and the hip to waist
ratio?
It's
just this kind of like primal deep-seated response to red. The waist to hips ratio and the facial symmetry is obviously a physiological effect, whereas the women wearing red is a conditioned response.
Okay, so if you've got the right hip to waist ratio, the right facial symmetry, and then you wear a red dress, no one will be able to resist you.
Or if your face isn't quite so symmetrical and your hips to waist aren't quite so perfect, then just wear red.
Oh my goodness. Now, one of my texters then says, what about women and lipstick recolour? I'm guessing if red has that effect, if a woman is wearing a red dress, a lipstick would have a similar effect?
Yes, definitely. Yes, yes. It's very much a conditioned response, all those scarlet women in Hollywood movies. Yeah. Yep.
Now, this is interesting. Veronica from Perth says, in the 70s, Sydney Domestic Airport was painted in hot orange and strong warm blue in areas where they wanted to move faster. It all had to be redone because there were so many angry customers. I think that's the equivalent of playing Barry Manilow to scare the teenagers away, isn't it? Painting something in awful colour.
Well, sounds like they were very strong, contrasting, bright, saturated colours, so that would not be a relaxing environment. Yep.
Someone's saying, is the red because of baboon bum syndrome?
Perhaps in baboon land.
yeah, maybe. Now, so if a woman wears red, a heterosexual man is going to largely go a bit gaga. But is there a colour that men wear that a heterosexual woman will go, oh?
Well, the study hasn't been done on that particular topic, but speaking from personal experience, I can tell you that a guy in a fireman's uniform or a cowboy outfit or who looks like Rip from Yellowstone, that works for me. So that's not actually a colour scheme, but certainly an outfit.
Zena's personal preferences.
Yes.
But, I mean, navy is a good strong colour on a man, isn't it?
Well, it is. It is. It carries all those connotations of being reliable and responsible, and so yes, perhaps navy blue.
Okay, ladies on the SMS, let's have a quick poll. Is there a colour that men wear which sort of, you know, gives you a bit of a thrill? Conversely, if you see a man wearing a particular colour, is there one of those colours that will just make you go, no. What about projecting confidence, Zena? Is there a colour associated with confidence?
Yeah, definitely. If, you know, we all tend to wear a lot of black or brown or navy. So if we're wearing a strong colour, a strong red if a guy wears, say, a navy suit but with a bright pink tie or a bright green tie, the fact that he's wearing a bright colour or that a woman is wearing a bright colour tends to convey a sense of confidence or an aura of confidence around that outfit, and so therefore it continues on to her as well, or that man as well. So
just because it seems a little risque,
it seems a little risky and a brave choice, if you like. Yep. Yeah.
And so the most calming colour, I thought it was, well, green or blue. Is there science on this?
There is. The evidence tends to suggest that it's not actually about hue. It's about a lack of contrasts. So if you wanted to have a calm room, take out all of the strong contrasts in that room. So take out all of the strong colour contrasts, all of the contrasting in terms of patterning and light-dark contrasts. So reduce all of the contrasts and the room will appear calmer. And the reason for that is that we, due to the mechanics of our visual systems, we're obviously attracted to red, but we're also attracted to strong contrast. So our eyes will be drawn to areas of strong contrast. And if there's too much strong contrast, our attention is hijacked. So if we're in a room with lots of patterns, lots of contrasting elements, where our attention is just all over the shop, if you like, and it's not a calming environment.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So back in the 70s, I don't know how anyone relaxed really, given all those terrible patterns. I've got Zena O'Connor here with me from Design Research Associates. Just a little survey on the SMS. Annie says, double-breasted navy jacket with a gold button on a man. Nothing beats it. We've got a bloke saying a woman in purple. Does it for me. Blue shirt. See, blue, I reckon, is going to come up on the colour that women like to see men wearing the most.
Blue chambray shirts.
Oh, yeah. Well, I bought my husband a jumper last week. I rarely buy him clothes, and I bought him a beautiful blue cashmere jumper. He hasn't worn it yet. Anyway. Now, your clients have included people like the Art Gallery of New South Wales, clients in the corporate world, including major banks. What kind of colour advice are they after?
Oh, so with my consultancy work with the gallery, Art Gallery of New South Wales or the MCA, it's mostly talking about colour in the context of paintings or exhibitions. Mm-hmm. I've done quite a bit of work for actuaries and banks and so on, and that type of work relates back to colour in data visualisation. So colour for PowerPoint presentations or colour for, graphs and so on. So, accountants, bankers don't tend to study design. They study numbers. So if they want to present their data in a way that will be appealing and not carry too many negative connotations, then they need to sort of seek somebody like me to help them with the colours for their data visualisation. From my point of view, it's common sense, but it's not their area of expertise.
Yeah, right. So when you say data visualise, are you talking about the PowerPoint presentations, maybe a brochure or something? Do you actually see examples where the colour is completely wrong and you're like, oh, really, they shouldn't have done it?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, definitely. I worked for, did a consultancy job for a firm of actuaries, and they needed help with the colours for their graphs. Mm. And the graphs, of course, were included in presentations to clients. So they needed to get the colour scheme right so that it conveyed a sense of the stature of their company, the importance of the data that they were presenting, and also legibility. The graphs needed to be legible.
This is great. Penny in Kingcumber says, in the late 60s, Alexander Mackie Teachers College banned the girls from wearing red because they were exciting the boys to.
Oh, well, there you go.
Okay, so I think some of the ladies on the SMS are just basically saying, give me a man in uniform, and that's,
and as, fireman, yeah.
As uniforms are often Navy, I think that's, and Navy has a sense of professionalism too, I think. Mm. Yeah. So we're talking about colour and the way that it is used here on Nightlife Tonight. Now, colour can be political too, can't it? You think of the murals painted in the colour of Ukraine's flag or Brexit with the symbolism of the UK and the EU colours being drawn apart. What are your thoughts on colour as a political force?
So that's actually a device that's gone back centuries. There were the Picts way back who would scare off Julius Caesar and his buddies by painting their faces with woad, which made their faces a bluish colour to try and generate fear in their opponents.
So we all need to picture Mel Gibson now.
Mel Gibson, Braveheart.
Yep.
William Wallace, I think he was portraying. So, Colour is a very clever visual device that's been used for centuries. There were the yellow vest protesters in France. I think they're still at it in parts of France. There were the hippies with the psychedelic colours. The minute you saw psychedelic colours, you could immediately identify that person was probably a hippie.
I'm just thinking a number of revolutions have actually had colours. I'm pretty sure there's an Orange Revolution, I'm just thinking Hitler's black shirts, brown shirts.
I think virtually every kind of political group has a colour. And you know, that of course goes back to the Crusaders and all sorts of old teams back then who would, like the football teams, who would have a colour that would act as a visual unifying device, rallying device.
Speaking of football teams, I know you have commented about the New South Wales versus Queensland State of Origin colour jerseys. Give us your analysis. Now, you are from Sydney, so you might have some bias, but what's the analysis?
So that was a mistake. I don't follow football. So here I am talking, you know, out of my whatever the saying is, out of my head about football colours. I'm going to refrain from answering questions about football. But obviously colour with football teams, it acts as a visual kind of rallying signal that, you know, allows fans to find their tribe and stick with their tribe and support their tribe. And it's not dissimilar from the Picts. With their blue faces. So all the Crusaders, I think there's actually a team called Crusaders, isn't there?
Well, look, just to support the Maroons, Annie in Port Lincoln says, I love a man in a deep maroon shirt, like fine wine. Sexy, she said. I'm not sure I would go maroon, but look, each to their own, Annie. Now, I know in the past you've presented research papers at international colour conferences. What are some of the latest research around colour that are being discussed?
So the AIC conference, which is held every year, it attracts all sorts of presenters, including colour vision scientists, architects, design professionals and so on, lighting experts. And there are lots of fascinating colours across multitude of different areas. One research study that I saw related to lighting that linked back to circadian rhythms, and that lighting is being used in aged care and dementia care. So the lighting mimics the circadian cycle. So for people in dementia care facilities, they often spend a lot of time indoors, unfortunately, and the circadian lighting helps to signal to them that it's evening, it's time to start to settle down and go to sleep. And apparently it has helped with reducing the nighttime wandering and disturbed sleep and so on.
So what sort of towards sunset time you'd get a kind of sunset
glow, and then the lighting would go darker to mimic, you know, the evening as though you're outdoors. And then in the morning, there'd be sunrise colours. And so, yeah, it was sort of a deep-seated signal to sort of wake us up or start to put us to sleep.
Tim wonders if you have any commentary about the colour of politicians' ties when they are imparting different messages.
Well, Trump with his red tie, perhaps. He's constantly wearing that. Look, a lot of politicians do that.
But if I was going to deliver some bad news, what kind of tie would you say that I should wear?
Probably a somber tie.
Right.
Deep grey tie. Yep. If I wanted to sort of win the ladies over, I'd probably wear bright saturated colours, because that would make me appear confident.
So if I was after the female
brave,
vote.
Female
that's what
vote.
I see. Yep. All right. Now, I know you're about to move to America, Zena. What's taking you there?
Oh, well, funnily enough, music. My daughter's a musician, and she's moving to Muscle Shoals, which is this fabulous, legendary music town in North Alabama.
That's in the song, isn't it? Marshall Shells has got the
Swampers. Right, yes, yeah. They're a group of musicians, and for those listeners who are interested in music, the current batch of Swampers are just as good, if not better, than the older Swampers. So, yeah, very much looking forward to that.
Well, you know what I think I might do in honour of that, and to wrap up our conversation, is maybe give Sweet Home Alabama a bit of a spin, shall I?
Fantastic.
Hey, Zena, thanks so much for coming in and talking colour with us tonight.
Thank you so much.
Zena O'Connor from Design Research Associates.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.